8. There was only the entry wound, a dark red hole from which watery blood still oozed slowly. Flynn could have thrust his thumb into it, but instead he groped gently around the back of his leg and located the lump in his flesh, where the spent slug had come to rest just below the skin. "God damn it! God damn it to hell!" he whispered in pain and in anger at the unlikely chance which had deflected the ricochet downwards to where he had stood below the bank, deflecting it with just sufficient velocity to lodge the bullet in his thigh instead of delivering a clean in-and-out wound. Slowly, he straightened his leg, testing it for broken bone. At that moment, the mat of drifting papyrus on which he lay rocked slightly.
"Might have touched the bone, but it's still in one piece," he grunted with relief, and felt the first giddy swing of weakness in his head.
In his ears was the faint rushing sound of a waterfall heard far off.
"Lost a bit of the old juice."
And from the wound, a fresh trickle of bright blood broke and mingled with the water drops to snake down his leg and drip into the dry, matted papyrus.
"Got to stop that," he whispered.
He was naked, his body still wet from the river. No belt or cloth to use as a tourniquet, but he must staunch the bleeding. His fingers, clumsy with the weakness of the wound, he tore a bunch of the long sword-blade leaves from the reeds around him and began twisting them into a rope. Binding it around his leg above the wound, he pulled it tight and knotted it. The dribble of blood slowed and almost stopped before Flynn sank back and closed his eyes. Beneath him, the island swung and undulated with the eddy of the current and the wavelets pushed up by the rising morning wind. It was a soothing motion, and he was tired, terribly, achingly tired. He slept. The pain and the cessation of motion woke him at last. The pain was a dull, persistent throb, a pulse that beat through his leg and groin and his lower belly. Groggily, he pulled himself onto his elbows and looked down on his own body. The leg was swollen, bluish-looking from the constriction of the grass rope. He stared at it dully, without comprehension, for a full minute before memory flooded back.
"Gangrene!"
he spoke aloud and tore at the knot. The rope fell away, and he gasped at the agony of new blood flowing into the leg, clenching his fists and grinding his teeth against it. The pain slowed and settled into a steady beat, and he breathed again, wheezy as a man with asthma. Then the change of his circumstances came through to the conscious level of his mind, and he peered around short-sightedly. The river had carried him down into the mangrove swamps again, down into the maze of little islands and waterways of the delta. His raft of papyrus had been washed in and stranded against a mud bank by the falling tide. The mud stank of rotting vegetation and sulphur. Near him, a gathering of big green river crabs were clicking and bubbling over the body of a dead fish, their little eye-stalks raised in perpetual surprise. At Flynn's movement, they sidled away towards the water, with their red-tipped claws raised defensively. Water! Instantly, Flynn was aware of the gummy saliva that glued his tongue to the roof of his mouth. Reddened by the harsh sunlight, heated by the first fever of his wound, his body was a furnace that craved moisture. Flynn moved, and instantly cried out in pain. His leg had stiffened while he slept. It was now a heavy anchor, shackling him helplessly to the papyrus raft. He tried again, easing himself backwards on his hands and his buttocks, dragging the leg after him. Each breath was a sob in his dry throat, each movement a white-hot lance into his thigh. But he must drink. He had to drink. Inch by inch, he worked his way to the edge of the raft and slid from it onto the mud bank. The water had receded with the tide, and he was still 50 paces from the edge. With the motion of a man swimming on his back, he moved across the slimy, evil-smelling mud, and his leg slithered after him. It was beginning to bleed again, not copiously, but a bright wine drop at a time. He reached the water at last, and rolled onto his side, with the bad leg uppermost in an attempt to keep the wound out of the mud. On one elbow, he buried his face in the water, drinking greedily. The water was warm, tainted with sea salt, and musky with rotten mangroves, so it tasted like animal urine. But he gulped it noisily with his mouth and his nostrils and his eyes below the surface. At last he must breathe, and he lifted his head, panting for breath, coughing so the water shot up his throat, out through his nose, and dimmed his vision with tears. Gradually his breathing steadied and his eyes cleared. Before he bowed his head to drink again, he glanced out across the channel and saw it coming. It was on the surface, still 100 yards away, but swimming fast, driving towards him with the great tail churning the water. A big one, at least 15 feet of it, showing like the rough bark of a pine log, leaving a wide wake across the surface as it came. And Flynn screamed, just once, but shrill and high and achingly clear. Forgetting the wound in his panic, he tried to get to his feet, pushing himself up with his hands, but the leg pinned him. He screamed again, in pain and in fear. Belly down, he wriggled in frantic haste from the shallow water, back onto the mud bank, dragging himself along the glutinous slime, clawing and thrashing towards the papyrus raft, where it lay stranded among the mangrove roots 50 yards away. Expecting each moment to hear the slithering rush of the huge reptile across the mud behind him, he reached the first of the mangroves and rolled on his side, looking back, coated with black mud, his face working in his terror, and the sound of it spilling in an incoherent babble through his lips. The crocodile was at the edge of the mud bank, still in the river. Only its head showed above the surface, and the little piggy bright eyes watched him unwinkingly, each set on its knot of horny scale. Desperately, Flynn looked about him. The mudbank was a tiny island, with this grove of 12 mangroves set in the centre of it. The trunk of the mangroves were twice as thick as a man's chest, but without branches for the first 10 feet of their height. Smooth bark, slimy with mud, and encrusted with little colonies of freshwater mussels. Unwounded, Flynn would not have been able to climb any of them. With his leg, those branches above him were doubly inaccessible. Wildly now he searched for a weapon, anything, no matter how puny, to defend himself. But there was nothing. Not a branch of driftwood, not a rock. Only the thick, black sheet of mud around him. He looked back at the crocodile. It had not moved. His first feeble hope that it might not come out onto the mud bank, withered almost before it was born. It would come. Cowardly, loathsome creature it was, but in time it would gather its courage. It had smelled his blood. It knew him to be wounded, helpless. It would come. Painfully, Flynn leaned his back against the roots of mangrove, and his terror settled down to a steady, pulsing fear, as steady as the pain in his leg. During the frantic flight across the bank, stiff mud had plugged the bullet hole and stopped the bleeding. But it does not matter now, Flynn thought. Nothing matters. Only the creature out there, waiting while its appetite overcomes its timidity, swamps its reluctance to leave its natural element. It might take 5 minutes, or half a day, but inevitably it will come. There was a tiny ripple around its snout, the first sign of its movement, and the long, scaly head inched in towards the edge. Flynn stiffened. The back showed, its scales like the patterned teeth of a file, and beyond it, the tail with the coxcomb double crest. Cautiously, on its short bowed legs, it waddled through the shallows. Wet and shiny, as broad across the back as a Percheron stallion, more than a ton of cold, armoured flesh, it emerged from the water. Sinking elbow-deep into the soft mud, so its belly left a slide mark behind it, grinning savagely, but with the jagged, irregular teeth lying yellow and long on its lips and the small eyes watching him. It came so slowly that Flynn lay passively against the tree, mesmerized by the deliberate waddling approach. When it was halfway across the bank, it stopped, crouching, grinning, and he smelt it, the heavy odor of stale fish and musk on the warm air. "Get away!" Flynn yelled at it, and it stood unmoving, unblinking. "Get away!" He snatched up a handful of mud and hurled it. It crouched a little lower on its stubby legs, and the fat, crested tail stiffened, arching slightly. Sobbing now, Flynn threw another handful of mud. The long, grinning jaws opened an inch, then shut again. He heard the click as its teeth met, and it charged. Incredibly fast through the mud, grinning still, it slithered towards him. This time, Flynn's voice was a lunatic babble of horror as he writhed helplessly against the mangrove roots. The deep, booming note of the gun seemed not part of reality, but the crocodile reared up on its tail, drowning the echoes of the shot with its own hissing bellow, and above the next boom of the gun, Flynn heard the bullet strike the scaly body with a thump. Mud sprayed as the reptile rolled in convulsions, and then, lifting itself high upon its legs, it lumbered in ungainly flight towards the water. Again and again the heavy rifle fired, but the crocodile never faltered in its rush, and the surface of the water exploded like blown glass as it launched itself from the bank and was gone into the spreading ripples. Standing in the bows of the canoe, with the smoking rifle in his hands, while the paddlers drove in towards the bank, Sebastian Oldsmith shouted anxiously, "Flynn! Flynn! Did it get you? Are you all right?" Flynn's reply was a croak. "Bessie! Oh, Bessie boy! For the first time in my life, I'm really pleased to see you." And he sagged, only half conscious against the mangrove roots.